homeboy in this, Ben Affleck. Yeah. He's the new Batman. But it's like, that's the thing. It's like, he plays Batman and he gets hate. Like, if Ben Affleck just plays some regular dude in a good movie, nobody gets hate.
Robin Pattinson's a new one too. The guy.
Oh, Robin Pattinson. I bet he could pull it off.
Yeah, but also too, when people die, it's a whole other thing.
It's like a whole other thing.
Like, you can't, because I remember like Jay-Z used to say this in a freestyle one time, but like, he's always been compared to Biggie, you know, and he's like, how am I supposed to win when you got me fighting ghosts?
Ooh,
That was cold. That was a cold line. Yeah. But it's like that. It's like you can't say you're better than the dead guy.
Never.
And it's the people that's gonna never let you be better, no matter what you do.
That happens in every sport. It happens in everything. When you that's one of the things that happened to Larry Holmes. When Larry Holmes surpassed Muhammad Ali, when he was the next heavyweight champion, everybody hated him because he beat up Ali, and he never got his due. Wow. It was like one of the best heavyweights of all time. Larry Holmes had one of the best jabs that has ever been seen in the heavyweight division. He was phenomenal in his prime.
Didn't he fight Mike?
He did. He fought
when
Mike.
When he was old.
He came out of retirement to fight Mike. I believe he was 36, but it was like a real 36, like 36 in 1985 or whatever it was.
Which is like 50.
1988. Yeah, it's a different time. They were really 36 back then. You know, like, there's guys like Bernard Hopkins that fight deep into his 40s. Like, I think his last fight was like he was 50 years old when he fought Joseph Smith.
Yeah, this is one of my.
Yeah, this was tough, man. But in the second round, Mike Tyson, or Larry Holmes rather, gave Mike Tyson a lot of trouble with his jab. The second round, okay, watch this. Because in the second round, Larry Holmes came out and he was popping the jab. Okay. This is in the beginning of this round. He gave him a lot of trouble with that long jab. Larry Holmes in his prime had a fucking phenomenal jab. And when he beat guys up with that jab, like Jerry Cooney fight's a great example. He was a sniper. He was one of the best heavyweights of all time. So what round is this, Jamie?
I don't know. It's like a highlight.
It's a highlight. Like, so it's not all of them?
I clicked on two, and it seems to...
But Mike Tyson, at this time, could not be denied. He was a destroyer.
Dude, he was so scary.
He was a destroyer. He was so much faster than everybody, and he was just trying to get close enough to you to unleash hell.
You know, you ever notice how, like, because you don't see too much of this anymore, but, like, I remember when I was little and Mike was the man. But there was always like these old dudes that just hated him for being so good. Somebody needs to teach this young punk a lesson.
Look at that head movement, man. When do you ever recall a heavyweight having head movement like that? Like, Mike's head movement was superb. Nobody. It wasn't just his power. It wasn't like, just back that up just a little bit, Jamie. Just a little bit from where we were so I could see him move his head. What is his fucking head movement, man? No, it's before that. Go before that. Because there was a series, like right here. Look at this series of moves. Look at this, man. This head movement was phenomenal. Larry Holmes is flicking that jab. Mike Tyson's meeting him with his own jab. And he's so hard to hit. That was part of the thing that people forgot about with Tyson, was how elusive he was in his prime when he had all that crazy wild head movement. So it wasn't just that he got close to you and smashed you. It was as he's getting close, you can't keep him off you. You can't hit him. His head movement was fucking superb.
They call what they call the peekaboo?
Yeah, peekaboo style. But it was a lot of bobbing and weaving because, you know, he was shorter than a lot of these guys. So there's a lot. Look at that head movement. Phenomenal. And just stays on you. And he could do that all night. And he kept his power deep into a fight. Mike Tyson was a terrifying force of nature when he was the champ. When he was at the top of the heap, he was different than any heavyweight that ever came before him. He was fast as Joe Louis and Muhammad Ali, but hit like Sonny Liston. I mean, he had everything.
Can you imagine being that young?
20!
And that... We're like just with that kind of confidence, like, nobody out here can really stop me from doing anything.
Anything. No matter what. He was 20 years old. 20 years old, and he was the heavyweight champion of the world.
Yeah, man.
And when he was just standing there, it was like it was destiny. He was standing there like it was destiny. Like we all knew it was going to happen. It happened. And we're like, holy shit.
You hear him talk about it now sometimes, and he sounds like he's talking about a different person.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it makes sense, right? I mean, it was a long time ago, and he took a long time off. And it's when you have, like, memories from 10, 15 years ago, like, how good are they? Like, you know, he probably has to watch his own videos to realize what he did. Like, his memory of it is probably as, like, flashes of it, but... Even my memory of, like, yesterday's shitty. I mean, it's pretty good. I can tell you like what happened, what I did, but my what do I visually remember? What how much of the actual experience do I remember? Very little.
Yeah. It's not accurate at all. and I heard, and I don't know how true this is, but I heard that like every time you access a memory, the next time you remember it, you're remembering the last time you remembered it, not the actual memory.
And you're probably remembering it how you tell it to people too.
Right.
Because a lot of times people leave shit out.
It does change. You ever do that with your parents? We like, Mom, especially when it was something negative, you're like, Mom, remember that time you hit me with that sack of nickels? And she's like, that didn't happen.
Yeah,
like,
they do get a little testy.
Like, I remember it happening.
Yeah, you remember it, but yeah, it's convenient. Back then, people hit their kids. It was normal.
It was real normal. In fact, it wasn't just normal, but it was... Because I talk about this in the special, actually.
Oh, yeah?
It wasn't just normal, but it was expected. It was like a sign of good parenting.
Yes.
That you had your kids in control. That's what you wanted to show the public... You wanted to show the public that, like, your kids are under your yoke. You know, you didn't have no out-of-control, crazy-ass kids. That was the whole thing. So if your mama smacked the shit out... If you smack the shit out of one of your kids now, everybody in the store is going to be like, was that necessary? But back then, it was like, yeah, get them. They would cheer them on.
In some places, they still smack their kids. I was in Thailand, and I was with my family, and I went to the gym. And when I went down to the gym to work out, I missed out on all this. But apparently... There was some Chinese lady with her son, and the son did something that pissed her off, so she beat the shit out of him in front of everybody. She smacked him in the face and smacked him like 3 or 4 more times, and she was screaming at him like in front of everybody. And all the other tourists are sitting around going, what the fuck? And this lady just beat the shit out of her kid in front of everybody.
Yeah, it was effective. I mean, in the short term.
Well, the problem with that is that first of all, it's horrible, but it also perpetuates more of it in the future. Like, those people are going to be more likely to hit people they care about, too.
Right.
They're going to be more likely to hit their kids.
And it's going
to
be the real negative impact is that it's going to be their number one problem-solving skill. You know, it's like your kid goes into something, like, you meet adults where it's like the first thing they want to do is fight over an issue.
Yeah.
It's like, because they haven't learned how to resolve conflict any other way.
Right, right.
You know?
Yeah. It's also like... Like the final straw, like you can press the final button. Like, let's just fight. Fuck this.
Yeah.
And like, some dudes just want to go right to the final button.
But it, like I said, though, it was convenient. You know, it's just like how now, like, people stick their kids in front of an iPad, you know, instead of spending time with them. It was like, if your kid was screaming in the store and knocking shit off the shelves and you wanted it to stop right then and there, you smack the shit out of them.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it was instant, worked. Now you sit there negotiating with your children. They're going to drive a hard bargain, you know? But I don't have kids, so I'm never going to have to worry about that.
It's tricky. Yeah, the communication with them is very tricky. You got to have open communication with them, and then you got to realize that they're, you know, 10 years old. They don't know what the fuck's going on. And you're having a conversation with them. You're trying to explain it to them, and you also have to calm them down because there are a lot of times when they get upset about something, they're not real good at managing their emotions. Like, if one of the sisters is mad at the other one, there's, like, always this kind of conversation and negotiation that has to be held. And
oh, wow.
You got to let a certain amount of time pass.
You have only daughters?
So, yeah. Oh. Then they get mad at each other. You got to let enough time pass so that the energy levels drop. Because a lot of times the way they think about stuff is directly connected to the anger they feel right then in that moment. Right, they don't have good management skills.
Mm.
They don't know how to not get too mad. Like, there's dudes that can say something that can piss you off, and you go, look, I could either escalate this, or I could just calm down and be a man and not care if this person's insulting or if this person's saying something stupid. I'm just going to talk to them like how I would talk to everybody, and that's on them. They want to be a dick, that's on them.
But how long did it take you to learn that?
Forever.
Yeah.
Forever.
I think for most people, it starts happening right around the time where you don't feel invincible anymore. Like, right when you're, like, somewhere in your 20s where you take that first real damage. Yeah. You take that first real L.
It's sound energy management. And it's sound discipline that applies to your whole life. If you can avoid conflict when it's unnecessary. Because there's people, the weakest amongst us, that gravitate towards conflicts constantly because it gives them a distraction from their own shortcomings and failings as a person. So they'll gravitate towards fights with people. Mm. They'll gravitate towards hyper-criticism towards one individual. And usually it's a sign of someone not looking at themselves critically. They usually have glaring flaws, but they're not willing to look at those. They look at other people's flaws, and they'll exaggerate those flaws and attack those people. That's a lot of what conflict is. Mm. A lot of conflict is internal. And if you're not dealing with it internally, the way you externally communicate with other people is a lot of times it's very shitty because you have conflict. Your body's in like a state of uncomfortability all the time.
Yes, I noticed that a lot of times when I'm gaming online. Like, you could tell, like, sometimes people behave a certain way. You know what I mean? And you're just like, what the fuck is going on in your house, man? Like, you need a hug or something.
Well, there's also games elevate people almost to the point of feeling like it's a real thing. Like, the adrenaline that's involved in, like, if you're in a game of Quake, for instance, and you're running down a corridor and people are shooting rockets at you and you're trying to survive and someone's chasing you down, it doesn't feel like your life's really in danger, but your system is ramped the fuck up. Your heart is beating fast. Your adrenaline is pumping. Your hands are shaking. You're sweating. Your brain is connecting this to the same type of feelings it would have if you were being physically attacked. So when people say wild shit when they're gaming, a lot of times they're just saying wild shit because they literally feel like they're in a war. They feel like they're being attacked without the danger. Yeah. So like, they don't feel physically in danger, but they feel like, ah, it's a fucking... Like, you play a game, you get done, you're like, fuck. Your hands are sweating. Yeah, you're like, Jesus Christ.
Especially a close one. Yeah.
Yes. Real close ones, they're crazy. And if you win, you feel like the best. And if you lose, you feel like such a piece of shit. Like, damn it. It's such a bad feeling to lose. See, that's one of the reasons why kids are so crazy today.
It goes along with what you were saying with the emotional management, because it's almost always, whenever I get matched up with adults, like you solo queue, when you get matched up when everyone's pretty much grown,
yes,
it's very few problems, unless you're already tilted.
Right, right.
Because some people come in and there's some bullshit from previous games.
Yeah.
They had a smurf on the other team, or one of your teammates was throwing or something like that, and you're just frustrated. You know, three matches in a row of some bullshit, or in the middle of your last one, it disconnected. And it's that kind of shit.
The best shit, though, is LAN parties. Because LAN parties, you're friends and you're all in the room, and you can talk shit in real time. So you look over at each other and talk shit. Oh, my God. They don't do that anymore?
No, because you can have, like, there's programs like where you can TeamSpeak, and TeamSpeak's all this shit.
But yeah, no, I know about all that, but I think that there's got to be room for the conference table. Get a conference table, get a bunch of dudes, link everybody up together. Someone acts as a server. You got zero lag.
In fact, I don't even know if they even design games with that in mind anymore.
That's outrageous. I'm such an old timer. But that was the shit, man, when you would play in a room together and a bunch of guys would get together in a room. And you'd have so much. That's how I got addicted to the games. The writing staff of News Radio had a LAN set up in their writing room. And we went in there, and we were playing Quake 3. And I was like, you motherfuckers, what have you done to my life?
Damn.
Dragged me into your fucking addiction.
Yeah, we had...
No, it was Quake 2. That's what it was.
I remember when Halo 2 came out, in the barracks we had... We got in trouble because somebody reported as an eyesore. But we had LAN cables, like... 200-foot LAN cables going across the balcony, like across the courtyard and shit, playing Halo. Had all Xboxes all linked up. And that was some of the most fun I've ever had.
Dude, when they make that shit virtual, when they get to a point where they can completely recreate a virtual reality situation like a video game, but you feel the ground on your feet, you got a real gun, it kicks when you shoot it.
It's coming.
You know, it's coming for sure.
It's closer than you think. I mean, Zuckerberg ain't make that pivot for no reason.
Have you ever done one of them places like Sandbox where you go in and you play virtual reality games?
No.
Oh, my God, dude. There's this one where you go into a haunted house, and it's all filled with zombies, and it's you. And I've done it with my whole family a couple times. My kids are shooting zombies in a virtual reality world. It's amazing. You wear a haptic feedback vest, and you go into this building, and inside this building, they have these green rooms. So you go into like a bigger than a podcast studio, maybe double the size of this podcast studio, maybe triple. As far as
of the whole building?
No, just us, where we are. There would be like one room. And in that one room, everything would be green screened, and then you were wearing this full virtual reality gear, and so you put this virtual reality gear on, and then they start the program, and then all of a sudden you see the floor. You might be on a pirate ship. You might be in the middle of the desert. It's wild, man, and it looks cool. It doesn't look perfect. I mean, it doesn't look like the best video games look, but it looks pretty goddamn good.
I just saw, like, the next thing, like the Unreal Engine 5. So,
oh,
Quake.
Incredible.
Look at the pull that shit.
We've done that multiple times, but we look at it again.
Yeah, it's coming to where it's they're Ooh. There now.
Look at this. New haptic feedback vest lets you experience getting shot virtually. So that must be like a painful one.
Wow.
Yeah, they're gonna rig it up to the point where someone's gonna be willing to take a game where you die. Virtual reality, you're going to duel to the death.
It's going to come a time where the best gamers will also be the best athletes. Like the top, instead of the top athletes going into the traditional sports, they're going to be doing this shit because you're going to have to be athletic to be good at the best. You know what I'm saying?
Right, because if it does get to a point where it's your body is your player.
Yeah. Yeah, right? Where what you can do in the game is directly proportional to what you can really do.
Well, players, I mean, I would think that anybody who's like an elite level athlete is going to have faster reaction times too, and probably be better at handling pressure, right?
Yeah.
If they figure out, like, I know they've done some other type of places that have like structure, like a warehouse, and you're doing virtual reality, but there's actually like walls, and they have walls built in. You can touch the walls and move around them, and you're shooting at each other and shit. They're coming up with all these different places where you go and you pay. But this sandbox place, see if you can find the zombie game. It's something mansion, Deadwood Mansion, is that it? And dude, it's the shit. It's like you get zombies just running at you, and you're splattering them with machine guns or with shotguns, rather.
So are the guns virtual, or do you have something in your hand?
You have a plastic gun in your hand.
Does it have a weight to it?
It's got a little bit of weight to it, but also like you have to reload it. Like you have to push it down to reload it. You have to do things to reload your gun,
which
makes you panic.
Are there like power ups and shit?
Yeah. Well, yeah, you can get killed too. So you're in this house, and so this is what it looks like in the room. And it looks like a green screen when you first turn it on, but so this is the zombies. So they're coming at you, and you're in this dark. Like this is what it looks like while you're actually playing it.
Wow.
So look at these dorks. But it's fun, man. I'm telling you.
Is that here in Austin?
Yes, you could do it in Austin. It's at the Domain. It's the shit. Look at this. Come on, man. How fun is this? Rats are coming at you. You can stomp at them, and the zombies run at you. And there's also zombies that cling to the walls, and they wrap their tongue around you and strangle you. Things come out of the ceiling.
How do you keep from bumping into your family?
You do bump into them. Okay. You just got to be nice.
Well, as someone who's been in VR for a little while now, I've been wondering, why do you think everything is just killing zombies? Because
it's fun.
I know, but I mean,
they have to die.
Is it like the reality thing, like where it would be too fucking close to reality to kill anything other than a fake-ass zombie?
I think it's that it's close enough, to, like you're still killing a person, but one that you don't have to feel anything for.
Could you imagine if conflict breaks out between us and China and they start having virtual reality games where you can kill Chinese people and Chinese people can kill Americans?
Well, don't they already do that? I mean, not virtual reality, but...
If they start to have things like that...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's inevitable.
Except, you think, you know, people don't realize like how quickly people demonize other groups. How quickly.
Yeah. You know, the first thing we do, we always give them a name. We always give them a name that, because that helps the soldiers. Like we always give them a derogatory nickname.
Mm.
Yeah. Like that's where all the, like the a lot of the slurs come from. It's like, it's someone we fought.
Yep.
And we were like, you're in Iraq, it was like people started calling people Hajis right away. Just something not human, just something you don't even, it's a concept. It's not even like a person.
Right. You're othering them.
Exactly. You're othering them. That's the easiest way to get people motivated. You don't have to feel anything for it.
That's been a part of a human tribal relations since the beginning of time.
Yeah.
It's just how people are. It's easier for us to think of them as not being human. But that's the real hustle. That's the real hustle. The real world is just people. The fucked up thing is we get sectioned off into these government controlled areas. So we had a small group of people that always do a terrible job that we reelect every time four or whatever years. They're always terrible at it. And we let them lead us into conflict. If you eliminated all those people, all of them, all the people that tell you what to do, and you were left with just human beings, I feel like we could work a system out.
No.
I feel like we could work a system out without leaders. The problem is when you have leaders and leaders want to do this, and they want to do that, and they want to, and then there's companies that are profiting off of things like natural resources. Like there's something kind of fucked up about making trillions of dollars out of the blood of the earth.
Well, when you say leaders, because here's something that I just suspect, that everyone deep down wants to be led. It's just a matter of whether you trust the person in charge,
right?
You immediately like, yes, just what do I need to do?
We want a real leader,
right?
Yeah.
So a leader would always emerge,
right? But they don't, not anymore, because now the price is too high. So it's like the price of digging into a person's personal life or distorting their past is so sketchy for people. Like all these people, they all come up with some story of some horrific thing they did right before they run for election. As people know about this. So I think there's like a real hesitancy of a lot of brilliant people to get involved in that muckraking and just to feel what it feels like to have that.
We love to play in the mud.
But it's also like the type of person that really wants to be a leader is one of two people, right? It's either someone who really cares and wants the world to be a better place and thinks they can pull it off. They think they can do better and they can make some real change and they can maybe help the community of the United States as a community, like as a group of humans that want the world to be a better place for each other. And then there's crazy people. And then there's people that are like completely bought and sold by the political system and the special interest groups and the lobbyists, and they're deeply entwined and they have no ambitions whatsoever to try to step outside of that. They live in that world. They hobnob. They all know the same people. They go to the same parties. They think the same thoughts. They're just Hollywood with ugly people.
Right? Imagine being born with that. Like, you know what they just did in North Korea? They banned laughter.
For 11 days.
Imagine bringing that idea up in a room full of powerful people here, and no one being like, I don't think that's...
That's why you can't have anybody in control. You can't have a person in control. You can't have, like, George Bush or Joe Biden or any of these people that are in control where the whole world was freaked out that this is the guy that's... Whether it's Donald Trump or some people, it was even Obama. But just having a person who is the fucking leader of the free world is crazy. We all know it's crazy.
Yeah.
And having all these people that put that person into place and then seeing what the way they operate and what they do. Yeah. When you see that Nancy Pelosi makes $200,000 a year and she's worth $100-something million, you're like, what? Where'd you get that money?
Like, nothing to see here.
And then you hear that they can participate in the stock market. So they buy and trade stocks. And they sometimes know about things like laws that are going to be passed. They're going to benefit stocks.
I think you should have to give up all your assets.
Somebody just proposed, some senator just proposed that Congress people should not be able to trade in stocks while they're in office. But maybe even when you're out.
Yeah, ever.
But it's a tricky thing. It's because it's like when you're out, you're out. You should be able to do whatever you want, right? But did you make deals while you're in?
Of course you did.
That when you were out, they would give you information? Because, like, here's a deal that's legal, that's kind of sneaky. The private speaking deal.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there's a weird deal. Like, if you were president, right, and then you get out of office, like, Brian, you did a great job for us, and, hey, we would love you to come talk at our fucking blah, blah, blah meeting, and they'll give you $500,000 to go up and talk.
Which is insane. I would never, you know you hear those people, they're like, if you could have dinner with one person, and people pick politicians, like, why would you do that?
I would like to look in their eyes and smell their breath. I'd like to be around
them. I would interview, like, maybe somebody in their family, like their wife, their spouses. Like, I would talk to Michelle Obama before I talked to Barack Obama. Because they spend their whole life just so... You know, everything's so sanitized and pre-thought out. And
you got to talk to one that's dying.
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea.
You want to talk to one and gain their trust.
Get that motherfucker on his last day up in Oregon with the juice in his cup.
Maybe not even the last day. Like, Like, if you could talk to any president, if you have a conversation, which one would it be?
And they have to be 100% truthful with me?
Well, they don't have to. They're just going to talk to you. You're just a person. No magic powers. Which person would you want to talk to? Which former president?
Fuck, that's tough. Any former president?
Anyone that's alive. Not like Eisenhower.
That's alive.
Yeah, I would go to Eisenhower.
Oh, it would be Obama then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How much time do you think you would need to figure out if he's full of shit?
Fuck.
You need a few hours.
Yeah, I say a few hours of talking to him.
You need a few hours to see that spark. What is that?
Yeah. Because that's enough time to get him to repeat things. And
right. Just to be talking about stuff. I wonder if he drinks. If you just get a couple of drinks.
He does drink.
Ooh, perfect.
Remember he had a beer with the racism incident with the black professor? He got arrested.
That's right, by the white cop. Yeah,
and then they came to the White House and had a beer with Obama.
Who does that? That's one of the best things about him being president.
Yeah,
he thought outside the box.
Yeah,
and he could pull something like that off. Like, I don't know, you know, there's a lot of people that don't like his policy choices and what he did with drones and what he did with freedom of the press. There's a lot of issues with Obama, but I think there's issues with anybody that's the president. And I have a feeling that once you get into office, it is a wild menagerie of interests and people, and fucking you have to concentrate on this part of the world because there's conflict with this guy and this guy trying to steal the resources, and the stock market's fucked and this and that. And
it's celebrity with consequences.
Not only that, it's like you got to be the best in the world at it, and you just started last week.
Yeah,
you've never been the president before. Like, if you become the president and then all of a sudden you're inside, you literally have the toughest job in the world, and a new person tries it out every 4 years. It's a job like you probably should get real good at it, right?
Yeah.
You should probably do it for decades and decades, but we don't trust you. It's built into the thing. We don't trust you. Like any other job. Imagine if you were a CEO of Apple, but you could only be the CEO of Apple for 4 years, and then you have to run for it again. Who the fuck would disaster.
And I bet you there's definitely shit that they don't tell you until you swear in.
Oh yeah.
And then they pull you in a room and go, okay, so this is where the aliens are. This is who killed John F. Kennedy. We've also implanted a uranium bomb in the base of your spine. So if you get out of line, boom, we're going to blow your head off.
Yeah.
That kind of shit. Yeah.
Remember that Bill Hicks joke? He said, I think they take you into a room full with smoky industrialists, a smoky room, and he said, and then they play you a video of the Kennedy assassination from an angle you've never seen before.
That's brilliant. That's brilliant.
And then he goes, and then they say, any questions? And he goes, just what is my agenda? You know, I think you don't get to be the president unless they pick you until Trump came along. And I think Trump was a odd combination of, there were definitely people that stand to make a lot of money with him in office, whatever the regulations that he was passing, that he's friendly to business, and they thought it was going to be good for business, and so they had an interest in getting him in there. But he wasn't a regular politician guy. He was some crazy billionaire famous guy who's like famous for being outrageous. You're fired, and then all of a sudden he's running the country? Like, what?
I think what really fucked people up is that he didn't follow any of the rules. Because there's rules of, like, you can't do this, you can't say that.
Right.
You can't do this. You have to abide by. And he's like, fuck all that. And that fucked him up because that means you can't control a person.
Right. He was going to be his own guy, and he had the support of all the people that love him above and beyond any president ever had.
You think
before.
He's going to run again?
100%. You don't think he is?
Man, I just don't, because when he ran the first time, it was very divisive, but now there's these, you know, with the COVID division and the vaccine division, it would be like what happened before. Well, I hate to say on steroids, but
that's a phrase.
Yeah. But it's like it would be because now you have four or five reasons to fucking hate your family. I know people that stop talking to their friends.
Yeah.
I don't lose friends like that.
What if maybe Biden fucks it up so bad 4 years from now that Trump looks like a viable option? I think that's possible too. We're looking at a situation right now where we're a year in, right? January is a year into his presidency. And you can't hate a person for getting old. It's just a part of being a human being. But when you watch him ramble on TV, nobody has confidence that this is the most clear-headed, most logical, most well-read and wise of all the leaders in the world. That's a crazy thing to say, right?
Yeah.
If whether you think he's okay, whether you think he's fine, that's not the, my point is that the best representative of the United States of America? And I think most people, being honest, would say no.
No, most of the people that voted for Biden were voting against Trump.
Exactly.
And but Biden and Harris were acting like we looked at them as like saviors.
Some people did.
I mean,
a lot of people
did.
In the hardcore people in the Democratic Party. So that's the thing, man. Those are the people that they communicate with the most, other than the press. And the press is a lot of it. Is the hardcore members of the Democrat Party is a lot of the press.
Well, they don't. The thing is, they don't want because the pandemic was going on at the same time.
Yeah,
they didn't realize that like they represented the status quo at the same time that everyone was slowly realizing that going back to the way things were wasn't what we wanted.
Right. Yeah.
So that forced break where everybody got at least 6 months to a year off and you were getting money from the government so you didn't have to do more shit and you just had time to focus on what you wanted and what you liked. And then, and now people are coming back. They don't want to take the same jobs for shit pay and no benefits. And Joe Biden just the status quo was safer to some people than Trump. But most people don't want that. People don't want shit to go back to 2019 the way things were.
Yeah, I think what people would want is more opportunity to pursue what they really want to do versus what they were just doing for money. And I think when you take everything away, a lot of people at least, some people were just itching to go back to the way things were before. Just give me my job back. I miss not having to think about money. I miss knowing I got a steady check.
Yeah.
But some people are like, you know what? I'm happier just making fucking ashtrays or whatever. You know, I'm happier starting a business on Etsy. I'm happier doing this or doing that. Like, people just started doing different stuff. And they started thinking when something got taken away from them that they never realized that someone could just take something away from you like that. Like, someone could, like comics, you can't do shows. That was Los Angeles. This is how dumb the government in Los Angeles is. They were like, you can't do outside shows. And they're like, outside? What if we do outside? And the Comedy Store said, what if we do outside and we put up a barrier, a plastic, clear, see-through barrier between the comic and the audience? No. What?
Yeah.
No, I said you can't.
Then we did them in the window.
Bro, it didn't make any sense. The logic behind it was so stupid. And they didn't care about the businesses because they don't have to, because their money is not based on how much the businesses earn. If politicians' money was all based on a percentage of the gross profits of the neighborhood they control, they'd have a completely different way of dealing with people. And they would have let those shows keep rolling. Because if they knew that if all the bars were closed and all the comedy clubs were closed, the amount of revenue that's missing from their pockets would be substantial. If you tank an economy, you lose your money. Like, let's say you're a mayor, and what does a mayor get paid? Like,
I don't even know.
Let's just say it's $300,000 a year. What if you have a base salary of 100, but a potential for 7 to 8? So if potential for 5,000 or 500,000 more, rather, than you would have gotten on a straight up contract, you just have to show that you're friendly to business and that you're helping the businesses stay open in the area. So the more profit, gross profit, gets counted for in your area, the more potential you have up into a cap. But so you would want to make that cap.
But what's to stop you from selling out just your mom and pops for like a big fucking a super Target or some shit?
That's a good question. You'd have to have like very staunch regulations to stop from happening.
You gave me an idea earlier. What if after graduating from high school, we just sort of do for those kids what we did during the pandemic? Like, when you graduate high school, the government just for a year gives you enough money to live on, and you can just, because I feel like you would come out of that. Like, you're not even allowed to start college.
Right, right.
You just have to live for a year, try a little different interest, and then by the time you go to, because the hardest thing about me starting college was, like, they were like, okay, so decide today what you want to focus your whole rest of your life on.
Yes. You know? Yeah. That's, and it leaves people in a state of desperation. You know, I remember I made a lot of lies to myself where I pretended there was jobs that I could have done. You know, I was like, yeah, I could do that for a living. Like, my brain was like, what are you talking about? But my desperation and my worry about not having a future was having me convinced that I could do construction or that I could, you know, be an architect. Or I was trying to come up with jobs, like a regular job to do. But the idea of being locked into some sort of a job, like all day for 8 hours a day, for my personality, was like being strangled.
Yeah,
I was like, I can't do this. I can't do it. And I felt like such a loser, man. That's the ironic part. The thing that led me to success was the thing that made me feel like such a fucking loser when I was young, because I couldn't keep jobs. I wouldn't do it. I'd be like, I gotta get out of here. I can't do this.
Or just me. For me, I couldn't take things that didn't make sense.
Right.
Where it's like you're doing something, you have a boss that's like secretive or whatever the fuck, and you're doing something that is pointless.
Yes.
I just, yeah, it ate away at me, man. And I've had good jobs. You know, like, it wasn't the pay.
Yeah.
It wasn't where I was living. It wasn't even the actual work itself. It was just the idea that what I was doing didn't mean anything.
Sometimes you meet people along the way in your life that you meet just so that you kind of get, they're like a little lesson for you. Like, you could lose it all and you can go down this road where you just make a bad decision and now you're doing something meaningless forever. Like, there was this one guy that I used to drive limos with, and he was an older guy and he had a Cadillac and he was overweight, this poor bastard, and he knew all the places that had the biggest meals. Like, you tell him, like, where
is Vegas?
No, this is Boston. Okay. I was driving limos, and they had a pep talk for us one day, and they said, I forget the guy's name, but they were saying, you know, he works, you know, X amount of hours per week. He's like 60 hours a week. He's like, the guy's making more than 60 grand a year. He doesn't have to bust his ass. He's just sitting in his beautiful car, driving around. He makes a great fucking living. And I remember thinking while these guys are saying, like, oh my God, what a trap. Like, they're leading you to the dumbest trap ever. They're saying, like, you're going to give up all day, every day. If you're going to work 60 hours a week, that's an extra 20 on top of 40, right? So fuck 9 to 5. You're working a lot of extra hours. Another 20 a week.
Yeah, you work 12 hour shifts.
That's 4 extra fucking hours every day. 4 extra hours Monday through Friday. 20 extra fucking hours is nuts, but that is a lot of guys. A lot of guys just take that job. They'll do 12 every day, and that guy was doing 12 every day, and he was a beaten man. He was probably like 10 years younger than me right now, and he looked like a dead man. And they were talking about how, you know, he's got a great living, doesn't bust his ass, and I'm like, this guy doesn't want to take people to the airport. This is just like, this guy got stuck in this thing, and those people, like, they come into your life to show you. Like, okay, like, you can't just do something meaningless all day, every day, forever. You gotta have something, some reason why you like doing it. It's not that you can't drive limos. I drove limos. It's that driving them 12 hours a day, every day is not good. It's not good.
Unless you love it, right?
How could you love it? I mean, maybe you enjoy talking to people or you have a great client or something like that, but for most people, it's something you do to try to accumulate some money and try to get out. Like, I knew this guy who is he was a limo driver. He wanted to be a record executive. He was, like, really into music. He was talking about music. He was trying to figure out how to bankroll. Like, this is, like, in the 90s. He was trying to figure out how to bankroll, like, a CD and put together, like, songs and bands and shit. He just was stuck in a job, you know? He's just doing a job as a...
Did he ever do it?
I don't think he did. I think maybe he tried once. I lost touch with him. It's very tricky, that world, man. Where you have to drive people around and you're in your car all day and you're probably sucking in the worst air that you could get. The air on the freeway?
Yeah, the highway air, yeah.
How bad's that air? That can't be good for you. Has anybody ever done an analysis on how bad highway driving is for your health? Like, people who drive limos or people who have long commutes every day?
One of my drivers recently reported me, and I think that's why.
Because he was losing his mind?
No, because I rolled the window down on the highway.
Oh.
But the car smelled so bad, and right when I got to the point where I couldn't take it no more, we were getting on the highway.
Did he say, hey, roll the window up, and you're like, hey, fuck you?
No, but he rolled it up.
Oh, he rolled up that the guy pulled down window?
No, I rolled it down, and he rolled it back up. Oh. And then I rolled it back down.
Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. You guys didn't talk?
No.
Oh, Jesus.
No, we didn't talk, but the tension was thick, though. And then...
Hold on, that's another bit. Write that down.
And then this morning, I got an email from Lyft that was like, drivers have reported a couple of your recent. Keep in mind, I got a 5.0 on Lyft. I've been with them from the beginning. I got a 5-star rating. And now recently a driver has reported my ride.
Just one? Only that
no,
guy?
It says drivers, but it always says drivers, whether it's one or not, because they don't want you to be able to narrow it down.
Write that down, dude. There's something about getting in a lift with a stinky dude, and you roll the window down, and he rolls it up, and you roll it down again.
Because like I said, if I don't care about you, how can I tell you that the problem is the odor?
I know, but the problem is you guys aren't talking. What's funny is you're not even having a conversation. You're just rolling the windows down.
Because you know why? Hold on. What it is the passive aggressive, I'm going to roll the window up without saying anything. He's already at the point where he feels disrespected. So I think to him, it's like this is beyond talking.
Well, he shouldn't have a bullshit car that doesn't have a child lock.
For the windows?
Yeah.
Oh, maybe he did. He didn't put maybe it. He didn't turn it on.
Like he likes the game.
Yeah. And it's also me kind of being cowardly, but it's like at the same time, I'm not trying to upset the motherfucker that's driving my car.
That's not cowardly. That's just being nice. Like, you're not going to change his smell over the next 40 minutes that you're in a car with him.
Yeah.
You're not changing his smell.
Because you know what it smelled like? It smelled like he just ate some, like, exotic food or something.
Maybe he did.
And, like, but didn't, he didn't air it out.
Some people get real sensitive to that if you're eating, like, a lot of garlic or weird foods.
Yeah.
Some people are real sensitive to that.
Yeah, I mean, if you just depend on what you're doing. Like, you know, if it's fish or something, it's like you got to eat that shit at home.
You can't, like, bring, like, a baked piece of fish in a car.
I've seen so many fights on the subway, on the train, from people trying to eat on the train. And, they open it up and there's something pungent. And somebody's like, hey, man, what the fuck are you doing? You know, and it turns into something.
That's funny.
Because you really are. That's a decision you make. Like, you know what you're doing. If you open some food on the train, you said you're basically rolling the dice that nobody on this train has the balls to confront me about this.
Have you ever eaten durian?
What is that?
Durian is a fruit that in many hotels it's illegal. It's illegal to eat on a lot of planes.
Wow.
It has a rotten, disgusting smell to it. It's the weirdest smell for a fruit. It's not bad tasting, but you have to get past the it's one of those weird things where the smell is worse than the taste.
So why do people eat it?
They like it. Some people like it.
Mm.
It's a popular fruit. Again, I ate that in Thailand. That was in Thailand as well. I was like, this is weird. This durian stuff is so weird. It's there's rules and regulations on a lot of airlines, a lot of hotels. It's that weird.
Huh, I never heard
of
it.
I wish we had some in here. I'll bring you some. Show them a picture of what it looks like. That's what it looks like. Oh, why people love durian, the banned fruit that stinks like garbage. The aroma of durian. Look at this. One of the most polarizing foods in the world is hard to pin down, but there are some attempts to have people have made. Limburger cheese, gym socks and turpentine, New York City's hot summer garbage, and pig droppings. So that's what it looks like.
That's all you got to do to make me not eat some shit. It smells like New York City.
But look how beautiful it is. It's a beautiful piece of fruit, like all the little prickly things on the outside of it. And if you cut it open and eat it inside, it's just this rancid, weird, sweet, stinky thing.
Where's is the shitty smell coming from, the white or the yellow?
The yellow stuff that you eat. It stinks. I mean, maybe the white stuff stinks too, but the yellow, it's a weird thing because you would imagine that that's not good for you. Because if you look at all the thorns and everything on the outside, that means nature doesn't necessarily, I mean, I'm just guessing, but that nature doesn't really want you to eat it. It's like hiding it from you. It's hiding it inside this literally like prickly armor, right?
Well, this plant has like evolved for this as a defense. But the plant's probably like, come on, I got spikes, I stink.
But look at the nutrition profile. Compared to a banana has 358 milligrams of potassium, but durian has 436. 2.6 grams of fiber for a banana, 3.8 for durian. Folate total 20 for the banana. I don't know what a PG is. And then 36 for durian, and then vitamin C, 8.7 milligrams.
That's not convincing me,
versus 19.7. Yeah, it's super healthy for you.
Yeah, but that's the trade-off. I would just trade off. I'd rather be low on all that.
Yeah.
And eat a plant that smells like New York City garbage.
It doesn't smell quite that bad, but it doesn't smell good. But it's to me, it's like if I want fruit, I want like something that tastes good and smells good. I want like watermelon. I want I want a peach. Yeah. I want a juicy ripe peach. You know,
not something that I gotta. Because if you open up one of those, it's gonna become a discussion.
I don't want to be conflicted about what I'm eating. Yeah. I want to like bite into a delicious orange and just like you know, you get the perfect orange. Yeah. You know, an orange is like it's a dark orange and it's got a lot of life to it.
I'm a tangerine man.
I love tangerines.
Yeah, but see, this it's asshole motherfuckers out there that'll like bring a fruit salad to the function and it has that shit in it.
Oh my god, who does that?
It's assholes out there that'll do it.
Yeah, just to fuck with you. So this is my culture. Like, fuck you.
When you bring shit to a potluck or something, you got to bring shit you know everyone's eating.
Pineapple's tough to fuck with. If it's hot outside, you got some cold pineapple, that's tough to beat. It's because it's got a bite to it. It's like chewy.
Yeah, it's a good texture.
Oh, my God, the sweetness of the pineapple.
Man, you ever had a fresh one?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's nothing quite like it. Mm. I mean, oh, man, any good ass, any fresh fruit is just great.
Even coconut milk, like right out of the thing when they hack the top of it with a machete and stick a straw in there, like, God damn, that's good.
It's real good. Yeah.
God damn, that's good. Because you know, there's things that taste good because you're supposed to eat them, right? Like fruits, like they want you to eat them. Like they're going, come on, look at me, I'm so pretty. Mm. Come eat me.
And it's cliche too, but it's also like the environment you're eating them in. Like if you get some fresh pineapple in the morning, like when the sun coming up and you at the beach, or you know somewhere like that, it's like that's the ultimate shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you just had a blunt. Fresh pineapple cracked open right there, sunrise.
But fresh anything, right? Like if you caught a fish right there at the beach and you fried it, like on a fire that you made, like right there, you had a little grill set up right there on the beach, and you just salt that bitch up, put a little olive oil on it, lay it on that little Weber grill,
it's nothing
flip
better
it
than
over.
That.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, you can do all the fancy shit you want to
meat. Oh, my
shit.
God.
But the fresh shit with just a little bit of salt, pepper.
Yes, and cooked over wood. Like I've been doing a lot of that lately. I've been doing a lot of that lately. There's something about just cooking over firewood. It's like whatever caveman shit that makes men enjoy grilling, there's clearly a thing. Like it's not just me. It's not like it's clear. It's been a fucking dad meme forever, right? A theme that guys, the dad will be out there flipping the burgers and making the steaks. It's always been the case. Men like to cook over fire. Women like to cook, and they like to cook over fire, but men really fucking like to cook over fire.
There's a power to it.
Well, there's something that connects us to some raw, primitive, like, it's like it excites parts of your brain where you're cooking meat over fire.
You know what I love to see you try? And I would like to try it if you haven't tried it before.
What?
So I don't know if you ever, this blew my mind because I just learned this like a few months ago. There's a Brazilian cow.
Oh, yeah, I know about that. Yeah.
And it has a hump.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that hump is a specific cut of meat you can only get from Brazilian cows. I forget what it's called, though.
I forget what it's called, too.
Yeah, but...
But Brazilians know what the fuck they're doing, man.
Nobody does it better.
Churrascarias?
Cupim.
Traditional meat cut from Brazil. A beef hump of a Brazilian... It's a zebu cattle. Interesting. It's a tender, rich, and marbled cut of meat. Whoa! Bro, they figured it out. Those churrascarias is the greatest fucking invention in all of culinary foods.
What is a churrascaria?
You never been?
No.
Oh, my God.
Is that just a Brazilian steakhouse?
Have you ever been to Fogo de Chão or any of those places? No. Oh, my God, Brian. What the fuck are you saying to me? You have to go. I wish we could go right now. Maybe we should go before the show. It's 4:45. Okay. What it is they have fire and then skewers of meat that are set up around the fire. And you have a card, and on one side of the card is green, and one side of the card is red. So when you have it green, you leave it up, and they just come over with all kinds of foods. They have, like, chicken wrapped in bacon and garlic beef and picanha. And
I like that.
All of it is cooked over, and they never stop. They never stop coming to you. And they give you tongs, and they slice it off of the skewer right there by your table, and you put that shit in your plate, and within 10 minutes, you're like, I can't eat anymore. And they keep coming. They keep coming. They're bringing over pork ribs, and oh, my God, it's phenomenal. It's one of my favorite places to eat.
And what did you call it?
It's called a churrascaria. Churrascaria. It's a Brazilian term. I ate at one in Sao Paulo. I've eaten at them in Rio, in Brazil. It's pretty fucking dope. It's a style of cooking that they invented in Brazil.
Isn't it just, is it just like the like in the oven?
Yeah, but it's the style of restaurant. Like, it's not an oven. They just have wood that's burning in a pit, and then they have these steaks that are around it. And they generally, like, see if we can show how they cook it. You could see it. So it's a Portuguese word for barbecue. That's what it is. So you could see the way they cook it. There's videos of it where they have, like, the fire in the center.
But everything's moving around. Open flame cooking.
Yeah, right? Most of it. Or this one's not. This one's doing it a different way. But it depends on the place. Like, some places they actually do it over live fire, and some places they do it over these kind of ovens. But the key is that everything's rotating, and so they cook it on the outside, and then they bring it to you and slice the outside of it off onto your plate, and then they put the rest of it back over the fire. So it keeps slowly cooking and slowly browning the outside. It's like, you bought in that shit. You're like,
That's so incredible.
It's so good.
Dude, I love that kind of. I love an expert. I told you, we talked about this before. Like, there was a Peruvian chicken spot at the bottom of my high rise when I lived in Virginia. And everybody I brought there was like, oh, really? Like a chicken spot at the bottom of an apartment building? And everybody I brought there was like, holy sh! All they made was chicken.
Mm.
All they made was these little rotisserie chickens would just spin all day long and drip juices on each other. It was like a giant wheel that would do that.
We had a place like that in Calabasas that went under because the dude didn't want to switch to credit cards.
Oh yeah, you said you would buy it.
Oh my God, it was amazing. They went under because the guy, he would only take cash. He never wanted to switch over to credit. People were like, I don't have any fucking cash. Come on, take a credit card.
Anybody carrying around $300?
They had a big copper colored oven in the middle of their store, which is like they built it. So they had, it's a Starbucks now, but back when I was first living there in the 90s, it was this big ass wood fired oven, and they'd be constantly throwing wood into this pit. They had stacks of firewood. This is like in Calabasas, and they have this giant rotisserie that's spinning around with all these chickens on it, and it was the best chicken you've ever had in your life. They had it down to a science because that's all they cooked was chicken. And they had a few other things, like they made like pastrami Rubens and a couple. But if you were there, you were there for the fucking chicken. The chicken was out of control. It was out of control. It was so, the spice, they just had it down with the right amount of butter, the right amount of spice. It was, But he went under. Is that chicks? There it is.
How can your shit be that good and you go out of business?
Bro, that's what it looked like. That's what it looked like. So they had all these chickens spinning around. He went out of business because he didn't want to fucking take credit cards. They had been around for like 25 years. The only Mexican Jewish restaurant in town. It was Mexican and Jewish. They were the shit.
Damn.
It's it says Woodland Hills. I guess it was Woodland Hills.
I wanted you to find that guy and get the recipe.
Well, you would need that kind of a grill, too. There's a thing about those oven grills. That's why people love Kamados. You know what a Kamado is?
Mm-mm.
A Kamado is like a big green egg. That's a famous Kamado, or Kamado Joe. It's a special kind of grill that's lined mostly with ceramic, and it creates like this. There's a heat, and there's a way it retains moisture in these like ceramic grills that has a certain special flavor that imparts in food. People really love it. Hmm. It's like a very very popular way to slow cook things. A lot of people really enjoy slow cooking things in a Kamado. You never seen one of them before?
No.
Pull up a Komodo. Kamado is like the most impressive company. I had one of those when I lived in California. But I left it
Komodo.
At the house I sold because it was too heavy to move. But a Komodo Kamado is a...
So you have to have it like built in.
Well, No, they wheel them in. But this was a really pretty one. And the thing about it was, it's like these Kamados, like you can get one from Weber, like the same company that makes them kettle grills. They make a Kamado, a real nice one. They make, like, if I was going to buy one, I'd probably buy that one because it's steel. It retains heat, and it does all the things that the other one does. It's like really well insulated, like by design, but also it's light. It's not like impossible to carry. Like these motherfuckers, I had one of those.
Oh yeah. I've heard them call something else.
It's a Kamado grill. I had see that one in the center? I had one like that. Like the big blue one that's in the middle. I had one like that.
And it's that heavy?
Oh my God, it was so heavy. It was covered in tile. That's a Kamado Joe. But the one I had was this Komodo Kamado. That one, the lower right to the side, to the right cursor of where you are. Yeah, that thing. That's a That's one by the same company. That's the biggest one they make. I had the circular one.
That's how big they are?
Yeah, that's
oh,
how big they are.
Okay, see, I didn't, I was, the scale was off in my head.
No, they're huge.
That's insane.
That one's way bigger than the one I had. I had that one, the one in the middle, Jamie. The one in the middle, right there. That's what I had. So that was like the medium size. That's that one says 23 inches. That was about the big as big as mine
was. What were you cooking on that?
That's the thing. Mostly I just cook steak. Mostly I'm grilling meat. I try to do a bunch of other stuff, but what I like to, I eat meat. That's what I do. I eat mostly meat. Like when I feel at my best when I'm eating a lot of meat. And I don't like to, when I fuck around with bread, I do it just for the taste. When I eat pasta, I know I'm paying a price. It's like the way I feel if I do shots of tequila. Like, okay.
Right.
I know what we're doing. We're just going to enjoy this for a little bit, but we're going to have to do some recovery work.
Yeah, you're like, I got to put this in the bank.
Yeah. But those things are, you know, people like that kind of cooking. And oh, yeah. And if you cook on those things, man, there's something about that.
And you're putting wood in that basket?
Well, you can. You can put wood in there. Some people do, but most of the time you use lump charcoal. But I've been cooking on one of these Argentina-style grills where you crank the thing, click, 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 click.
Oh,
it goes up or down. And I've been cooking on straight firewood, like logs of oak logs. Man, there's something exciting about that.
Really?
Yeah, something exciting about it.
The wood makes a difference?
It makes a difference. Yeah, for sure. The smoke makes a difference.
You smell it
in the meat. But there's something about cooking outside over fire, and you're looking at the fire and hearing the meat crackling and taking in the smells. It's part of the experience. It's like almost like foreplay to your dinner.
Yeah, well, you obviously eating shit that you've killed. See, I've never done that.
Yeah, but even if I eat like a domestic steak, even if I have like a nice grass-cut ribeye, a grass-fed ribeye, rather, grass-fed ribeye, with, you know, I'll put a little bit of garlic in the pan, and I'll put some butter and some rosemary.
Some thyme.
Get some fucking herbal scents on that meat and baste it on top of it, too.
Yeah.
There's something exciting about cooking over fire, man. Like I'll still cook in a pellet grill, and I'll sear on a cast iron frying pan, and I love cooking. But there's something about fire. It brings out a thing in people where that genetic memory that we were talking about, it reminds us of how thrilling it was to be cooking a piece of meat that you killed over a fire, because that meant your family was going to live. That means you're going to survive another day. You weren't going to be hungry in the morning. And that means your children might be able to carry on and live. Because most people died. I mean, imagine what it was like living half a million years ago, million years ago.
Yeah. I mean, most people didn't survive childhood.
Yeah, most people. Yeah. And if you did, you probably got eaten by a jaguar. You know, that's why everybody's scared of monsters. Why are little kids scared of monsters? They're not scared of bank robbers and fucking car accidents. They're scared of monsters because of some weird fucking memory of cats eating us.
Really?
Yeah, Rupert Sheldrake talked about that. He was talking about this idea of memory that's attached to, like, innately attached to people, that's probably the origin of that one, that the idea of being scared of something with big teeth that hides in the dark. Like, what is that? It's a cat. It's a big cat. Yeah. You think about where we evolved. We evolved in a place that's filled with big cats. And there's so much evidence that ancient humans and ancient hominids were eaten by cats. So much evidence.
Especially something that's quicker than you.
Oh, my God. Not just quick. Why wouldn't it eat you? We're the easiest things to eat. We can't even fight back. What are we going to do? If we don't have a weapon, we're fucked.
Yeah. We can build traps.
Yeah. It's there was a horrible fucking picture of a little baby monkey clinging to its mother while its mother was in a leopard's mouth. So its mother... The leopard has its mother's head like completely crushed in its mouth, and it's walking with this dead monkey, and the little monkey's like clinging to the body of its mother as it's being carried away. Look at that. Right there. Bro.
Oh, shit.
Oh, shit indeed, man.
You got to drop off, son.
I mean, what do you do? It doesn't matter if you drop off. You can't go anywhere. That's why you're clinging to your mother for the in the first place.
It happens apparently, or what?
I'm sure it happens. Jesus. The mothers are more vulnerable when they're carrying the baby. That's a lot of extra weight.
Damn, this is sad as fuck, man.
Look at that picture. That look at that cat.
Look what it says.
Look at that cat looking at that monkey. Cunning leopard uses baby monkey as bait to lure adults towards it. Oh, my God.
Bro, that is... I can't...
Oh, my God.
I can't even look at it.
Oh, my God. That's so demonic. But then again, so is Chick-fil-A.
True.
Chick-fil-A's demonic, too. Somewhere there's a gigantic warehouse filled with chickens stuffed into cages waiting to be turned into sandwiches.
Just for clarity, this one says that it adopted the baby baboon after it killed its mom, so...
Oh, my God.
Weird. Oh, he's like, oh, we can use you as bait from now on, son.
Adopted the baby baboon. That's just some animal rights asshole bullshitting. He probably ate it eventually.
Yeah, all those pictures from the same day.
Probably wasn't hungry yet.
Tenderizing it.
Yeah, he wasn't hungry yet. He ate its mom.
Make it a bigger meal.
He's waiting. Yeah, why don't you get bigger? I'll just hold you. You're not going anywhere. I'll keep you right here because I get hungry. I need a midnight snack.
He's like, that's the first cheetah to discover farming.
Yeah, find out how long that fucking baby monkey stayed alive. Look at it. It's licking it. Oh, God.
That might not even be realistic. Photoshop a little bit.
Look at that. Leopard takes care of baby monkey after hunting his mother. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, that does look kind of Photoshop. The one you're on right now, the
this
big one.
On Facebook, too. That's why I'm not giving it credit.
I don't know. It looks real to me.
Well, it's bad life.
I want to believe.
Like, this one's not.
That's what's going on shit down there? Bro, this is real.
That's
all
not
of it's real. That's a real okay face. All right. It's definitely not Photoshopped.
Oh, this one? That
which
looks like
one?
It's a scene from The Lion King.
Oh, my
King.
God.
I don't think that's real either.
Oh, my God. Oh, that's probably real, dude. No, bro, that's probably real. Look, it's a series of images.
I'm sure
that's real.
This is real, too.
What is that? An American Eagle? That one's fake. That person's not even in that tree.
Yeah, that's totally fake.
That's like a glitch in the Matrix. Yeah, fuck living in that world. But that's probably why people are afraid of monsters, you know, because they know that. They know that's possible.
Yeah, especially like the unknown shit.
Yeah.
You know, because there's I forget, you know the Vsauce guy? You ever had him on?
Yeah, I had Vsauce on way back in the day.
Yeah, but I remember him talking about the difference between terror and horror. He has this whole thing with the Uncanny Valley and all of that, but it's like, but he was talking about how like the unknown is horror. It's the sound you heard, like you know someone's in the house, but you don't know what it is.
Mm.
You know, the terror is like there's a lion right there.
Oh.
But the horror is, what the fuck was that?
Right, that
you know?
Makes sense.
Something ran by. What the fuck was it? That's why like all those classic H.P. Lovecraft shit. That's why like you don't see the monster
right
till the end, or you know, you don't. They don't describe them as in this very like general sense, so you can make it up in your head.
Well, my favorite monster movie of all time was American Werewolf in London. That and Alien, the original Alien, and in both of those movies, you don't really get to see the animal or the alien until the end. Like you see like flash images of it until late into the movie.
Right.
You know, like the American Werewolf in London, you see a quick glimpse. Like one of the best scenes in the movie was a businessman in the tunnel. He's in the subway, and this guy's just hanging out, looking at his watch, waiting for the train, and then he hears, and he's like, "What the fuck is that?" And you see him looking, and he starts talking like, "Hey, who's there? Who's there?" And then you see him see the werewolf, and you just see him, and he's see if you can find that scene. Businessman in the subway. What do they call it? The tube in London. And at the end of the scene, the werewolf is at the bottom of the escalator. The guy's running up the escalator, drops his briefcase, papers flying everywhere, and at the end of the scene, the werewolf just moves into face. Give me some volume on this.
Is that Christian Bale? No.
No, no, some regular dude. This is 1981. So here's that. And this dude.
Hello? There's someone there.
Bro, this movie's so good. John Landis was an absolute animal. Imagine
I can assure
that
you that this is not in the least bit amusing.
Okay, this is where you need to get the fuck up out of there, man.
I shall report this.
It's so British. And then somewhere along the line, he realizes things behind him. Watch, he's going up the escalator. And then he sees it. And you see he doesn't believe it. And then the motherfucker's in a full-on panic. He's like, what the fuck did I just see? And then he goes up the second flight of stairs. Then he hears it behind him. And then he sees it.
Good Lord.
So you see it from the wolf's eyes as it run towards him. And this poor fucking guy. Meanwhile, he's still got his briefcase.
Yeah, fuck that briefcase and that umbrella.
No cardios, dude. A zero cardio.
My man, supposed to have that tie off by now.
I would hold on to the, under a normal circumstance, I would hold on to that fucking.
You better not pick that
shit
up.
Oh my God, he picked up the briefcase. Like, it's falling apart. It's falling apart. No cardio. He decided to die. This is my favorite scene in the whole movie. The guy's
nothing.
Climbing up. Look at this. Look at that thing coming to play. Imagine seeing that. See, they didn't show you much. They showed you enough. Come on, son.
The tension was crazy.
It's an amazing scene.
God, what a fucking dumb guy.
That's an amazing scene in a horror movie where they didn't have to show you much. Rick Baker made the where we... And our old studio in L.A., you never went to the old one, did you?
No.
The old one in L.A. had an American Werewolf in London that greeted people at the front door.
That's dope. Why you leave it?
I'm going to bring it back, but I actually ordered a new one. And the new one, the guy who makes it, Pat McGee, made me... He made an even better one.
That guy... You could tell, too, that guy wasn't even going to fight.
No, he gave up. I'm going to send you a meme, Jamie.
I don't know what it is, man, but people that have no fight in them, I just...
Yeah, you're supposed to feel like that. Because if you were in a situation with them, if they're a part of your village and shit went down and that guy falls apart like that, you're like, you bitch.
Yeah, it's like,
Jesus
Christ. Even if the odds are insurmountable, even if it's like Jason Voorhees standing in front of you, you're not even going to throw a punch?
Dude, I'd way rather have Jason in front of me than that fucking thing.
No, yeah. A creature? No.
Jason, like, still has limbs. Like, he keeps the mask on. He's not even biting you. What's he going to do?
His mom still makes him cry.
I feel like if you had, like, a good, solid shotgun, multiple shells, I think you got Jason. You just blow his knees apart.
But even that creature, that thing's lunging at you. You know you got no chance. But you at least going to kick or spit at something.
This is a meme that's
I didn't get that.
My dog. And the American Werewolf in London. They use this picture for so many memes.
Yeah, meme template.
Yeah, it's like one of those. See, Omicron in reality is my dog Marshall, and Omicron in the media is American Werewolf in London.
That was the werewolf?
Yeah, that's what it looks like at my studio. And that's Marshall. What's crazy to think that dog on the left, his lineage is a wolf. Somewhere in his history, there was a wolf. Like, that's what made a dog. Just like we came from ancient hominids, they came from wolves. But they didn't even come from wolves that long ago. That's what's crazy.
Yeah.
Like, we came from ancient hominids hundreds of thousands of years ago. But dogs, when did they come out of wolves?
I watched some shit recently I think it was on Netflix, where it was like, they were talking about koi wolves.
Yes. Yeah, they're a mixed breed between coyotes and wolves.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, most coyotes are descendants of wolves. They're the most clever of wolves, and they are they can breed with red wolves, and they're genetically dissimilar to gray wolves. So gray wolves. The thing about like what happened in America was ranchers and farmers poisoned off the wolves. And until they reintroduced them to Yellowstone in the 1990s, there was very few wolves on the West Coast, in the West, the Western wilderness, because they'd killed them all. But they never could kill the coyotes. Because every time they tried to kill the coyotes would just expand. So they expanded their territory over the entire country. There's coyotes in every single city in this country.
Everywhere. And the ones you don't see, like every time you see one, there's like 25.
But they got that way out of a need to survive against the wolves originally. Because when the gray wolves were coming in from Canada and wherever they would meet coyotes, they would kill them. So the coyotes had to figure out a way to survive. And one of the ways they figured out to survive is to constantly evolve their territory, constantly expand their territory. And then also when one coyote dies, when they do that roll call, when they with one missing, it causes the females to make more babies.
Oh shit!
The females have more pups. There's a great book called Coyote America by this guy Dan Flores, who was a professor. He taught my friend Steve Ranella, and then Steve introduced me to him, and I had a guest on the podcast. But he's an expert in wildlife and the history of wildlife in North America, and that's one of the things that he's like fascinated with is a coyote.
Did what makes coy wolves so dangerous?
Well, they're not more dangerous because a coyote is a wolf. A coy wolf is just a larger version of it, and it's just a hybrid.
They're bigger than coyotes smaller than wolves.
Right? Yeah, that's like a small wolf. Okay. Well, a coyote is a small wolf, right? But a big coyote is like 50 pounds. Like, that's big. That's a big fucking coyote. You see a 50-pound coyote. Like, what is it? How big do coyotes get? I'm guessing that 50 pounds is like the range.
I had that. Oh, sorry, I was comparing it to the wolves, as you were saying. I thought it did.
No, it's like half the size of a wolf.
Hybrids, but not separate species. So there's gray wolf, eastern wolf, red wolf.
20 to 50 pounds?
Yeah, so a 50-pound coyote is a big-ass coyote. 80 to 120-pound wolf, yeah. They get a little bigger. Like, you might see a 150-pound wolf, maybe even a little bigger than that, but that's like in Canada. It's a little. There's a thing also that mammals in cold climates tend to be larger than mammals in hot climates. That's why the Mexican wolf is a smaller wolf. Like Mexican or California deer is a good example. Texas deer, too. Small. But Saskatchewan deer, huge.
Huge. Yeah.
More than twice the size. A big-ass Saskatchewan buck might be 300 pounds. But a Texas buck, it's like if it's 150, that's unusual. That's a big-ass deer.
Really?
Yeah, they're not that big. They're little out here. Little baby.
You know anybody that has an actual wolf as a pet? It's illegal in a lot of places. But.
I knew a guy who had one that was part wolf. He had three of them that were part wolf, and they were so dangerous. They would get out, and they would wipe out like a nearby rancher sheep. They would get out and just kill 8 or 9 sheep for a goof. Yeah. They get together. They were around other animals. Like, that's what they love to do.
Kill them?
So they find, like, a bunch of sheep that are stuck in a pen. They're like, oh, shit. And they just hop the pen fence and just tore them apart. They killed, like, I think they killed 8 or 9 of this guy's sheep. And they don't listen.
That's what started them family feuds.
They're not listening either.
Where? You can't
like,
train them?
Sit. Fuck you. Yeah. Like, fuck you.
They're like cats. Like, somebody told me recently, like, we haven't actually domesticated cats yet.
Not really. I mean, a little bit. But a wolf is a different animal, man. They're not listening
to
you.
They're not listening to you, right.
No. You're their friend. You're not their dad. You're not the boss.
It might have been the first guy that got one of them things to fucking listen. And they're like, oh, we got to breed them. We got to get.
They definitely listen a little. I mean, they listen better than wild wolves. Wild wolves just fuck you up. I mean, if you raise a wolf, it kind of has a relationship with you. But it's never going to be like a German Shepherd that just listens.
Right. Where it's because it's not even about the. Because they hear you, but they just don't care about pleasing you.
Yeah.
The way like a domesticated dog does.
You just nailed it. That's exactly what it is. A regular dog is obsessed with pleasing you.
Yeah. And those dogs, or my cat, they don't give a fuck if you're happy about anything.
Yeah. I think what they literally raised dogs out of wolves. Where the ones that became dogs were the ones who were compliant. Like, they did this thing with, I think it was foxes. Yes. There was a podcast about it on Radiolab. And they were talking about how quickly, within a few generations of every time they had a fox, they would have these foxes. They were caged foxes. And every time they had a fox, where they would reach into the cage and the fox would growl at them or snap at them, they'd kill it. And so all the ones that lived were the ones who weren't interested in being aggressive. And so after a while, their ears started drooping. And it's only like a couple of years worth of breeding like this. Their ears started drooping. Their snouts shrunk. Their teeth got smaller. Their jaw bones got weaker. Everything changed. They literally changed within a couple generations. That's how strong like the influence of the environment
are foxes, are they related to wolves?
It's kind of like a canine, right? Some kind of a canine. I don't think they're directly related.
Nobody has pet foxes. Do they?
No, I don't think they do. But if they do, foxes are probably great pets because they like to, like, they'll play with people in the wild. Like, you know that Grizzly Man movie? Ever see that movie?
No.
Grizzly Man is a movie about a dude who basically committed suicide by bear. It's a Werner Herzog film.
Yeah, I've heard about it, for sure.
You need to see it. I can't believe you haven't seen it. It's the craziest movie probably I've ever seen in my life. This guy was out of his fucking mind. This guy was hanging out with Bill, these bears, like, I'm protecting these bears. No one's protecting these bears. This fucking Park Service, they're not helping these bears. The guy was crazy. And meanwhile, the bears had no idea he was alive. They're just walking around him. He's like, I'm here for you. I'm here for you, honey. Like, the bear would take a shit. He would pick it up. This was just in her body. This is her poop. He's like holding her shit. The guy was out of his fucking mind. And eventually, the bears killed him and ate him.
This was in your body.
Bro, you have to see it.
That's funny as shit.
This is one of my favorite scenes in the movie. There was an old sheriff. And the old sheriff was talking about, you know, Werner Herzog, who's like, I guess he's German. Is he German? Where's Werner Herzog from? But he has this way of talking, and he is the narrator, and he's talking. Where's he from? Germany. And wow. He's talking to the sheriff. Like, this is how he's narrating. And the sheriff goes, I thought he was retarded. And when the sheriff says that, he's like, no. No.
That's funny.
And then they talk to the guy who scared the bear off of his body. The guy was flying over in a plane and looked down and saw his rib cage, and the bear was digging through his. We saw the white of his rib cage, and the bear is just digging out his organs and eating through the rib cage.
Now, why do you say suicide by bear? You being
because the guy shouldn't have fucking been there. Like, why he stayed there over and over? He's camped with bears. He's camped in a place called Grizzly Maze. He camped in the Grizzly Maze. So he's hanging out with the most unthreatened predators in terms of, like, what's going to fuck with a grizzly? Nothing. Not a thing in the woods other than a bigger grizzly. So they're completely unchecked. They do whatever the fuck they want. And he was in a place where you're not supposed to be once they hibernate. Because the thing is, if you go to the place where the bears live and there's a bear that's still roaming around, he hasn't hibernated yet, it's past the time, that means he's starving. That means he's probably getting old, and maybe his teeth don't work good anymore, or maybe he can't run after the fish anymore. Whatever it is, he hasn't gotten enough food. So he'll eat anything. So he looked at that dude, and he's like, oh, here we go. And he killed him and killed his girlfriend.
See, I've always been mistold this story. I thought it was like bears that he lived with, like a pack of bears that betrayed him.
Well, he thought he was living with them. He was just living near them. Like, they weren't his friend. He, like, Coco's my friend. She's my friend. Like, he was this crazy guy. And he seemed, like, I don't know if he was homosexual or heterosexual, but he talked like a very effeminate gay man. And then he would say crazy things like, I don't know why I don't have a girlfriend. I wish I was gay. It'd be so much easier. If I was gay, I'd just find a guy. But I'm not gay. And you're like, who says that? Like, what is this movie?
Like, he's talking to the bears, just so y'all know.
But he's walking around with these cameras. But Werner Herzog left that in the film. Like, he knew what he was doing. Werner Herzog's a brilliant director. He knew what he was doing. He was making a comedy. It's like an unintentional comedy about a crazy guy who lives with bears.
And you think that he... Do you think he knew he was going to die?
I think so. I think he had to know that you can't sustain that. How long are you going to keep living with grizzly bears, bro? Eventually, they're going to realize they can eat you.
I mean, it was a bad idea from the jump.
Dude, he would find cubs that were eaten by the boars. So big males would eat cubs.
So this is a place with, you know, hundreds or even thousands of bears.
I don't know what the population of bears was, but there's a lot of bears in the fucking movie. A lot of bears in the movie. But it's a great documentary. It's a fascinating take on human nature because this guy has got it in his head that he's protecting these bears. But the reality of that whole area of Alaska is like there's plenty of bears, man. And they actually have to keep the bear populations in check because if they don't, the bears, like the one that ate him, run out of food. And they either attack people or they attack other bears. They eat cubs. Like that whole ecosystem needs to be managed.
Yeah. I recently went to the aquarium and they have the little shark thing, but it wasn't, cause I'm fascinated with like those apex predators. That's like, nothing's fucking with me. But I thought I was going. That's the only part of what I was disappointed about. Yeah. Was I thought I was going to see a motherfucker like that, like something that is.
You know, they can't keep a great white in captivity.
Why?
They die.
Really?
Yeah, I think one aquarium in Japan has recently kept a great white in captivity for an extended period of time, and I think they might be the first ever.
What do they die of?
I might have just made that up. I don't know.
What do they? Oh.
They just can't be contained in captivity. They go crazy. They die.
The longest one's ever been in captivity is 198 days.
according to this
article. What? Less than a year?
Was that in Japan?
I don't know. I didn't get that far.
So do they kill themselves or like run into the cage?
I don't know. They don't live, though.
Monterey Bay?
Oh, that was up there?
That's where they live. California.
Well, Monterey Bay is not Southern California, right? Isn't that Northern California?
Transported the shark from Southern California where it was caught.
To Monterey Bay. Yeah. Oh. Yeah, there's a shitload of them up in Northern California. Like all around San Francisco and
sharks,
all up there.
Great whites?
God, yeah, great whites are all over the place up there.
They put it back.
They released it back
to the wild.
Oh, interesting.
After it attacked and killed two non-great white sharks that were in captivity with it.
So they had it alive.
So
interesting.
It says the main reason why they're unable to be contained is they are nomadic and are adapted to traveling incredibly long distances. Because of this, they struggle in small tanks.
So what happens to them if they put them in small tanks? Do they just stop eating? They give up?
It's this thing. This thing doesn't say. This isn't a not.
They, you know, they might have some kind of some level of some very very minuscule level of self awareness. Where they, because like the smaller fish, I think they don't realize that they're in a tank.
Right.
But the shark knows, like, this is what I saw yesterday. This is what I saw yesterday.
That's what a bad motherfucker Steven Spielberg was, or is. Is that Steven Spielberg, one fucking movie changed the way people thought about a fish.
Yeah.
Changed the way, nobody was that scared of sharks before Jaws. Jaws changed everything.
I saw that on Betamax. I saw it on Betamax. It was a family.
Really?
Yeah, it was like I was at a aunt's house or something. And that shit scared the shit out of me.
It should. Sharks are crazy.
And now to go back and look at the behind the scenes and look how they did it all.
Yeah.
It's like to think about how they thought up what to, because Steven Spielberg is one of those dudes that like he wasn't listening to people.
Well, he's a genius.
That people going
doesn't have to.
Yeah, you got to have that. Those are the people that drag everything forward.
What does it say here? Oh, 2016, an aquarium in Japan, that's it, displayed an 11-foot shark that had been caught in a fisherman's net. The shark lasted only 3 days before dying. Okay, so this was in 2016. But the Monterey one, it was a lot longer than that,
2004.
Huh? 2004. Oh, 2004? Okay. So they just don't make it very long in captivity, huh?
Yeah, it just says they just end up stop swimming and they need to be pushed along. And
they
die within a few weeks.
They just quit. They just quit.
They're like, what the fuck is the point?
They quit like that dude in the tube with the werewolf.
Damn.
They just give up.
That feels like me in my last job before I just did comedy.
But isn't that important that you have jobs like that so you remember?
Oh, yeah. Dude, I'll never forget the night. You know Derek Poston?
Yeah, very well. Derek has no hair now.
Yeah, I know. Look at the shop out there, dude.
Looking good.
But this is when, like, because he moved to San Diego, like, right after me. I mean, right after I started. Like a year after, and we were cool, but this is the night that I was like, this dude's my bro, because I didn't have to even say anything to him. He came to my job. At this time I had quit the comedy club and I was just a bar back at this Irish pub called Rosie O'Grady's, and it was the night after it was the night of St. Patty's Day, it was just a swamp. I had worked my ass off, and right before we closed, one of the bartenders broke a glass in the well. So where they get the ice from.
Oh, no.
Because of the way this place was set up, it was like old school. I had to go to the hot water heater and like, so the only hot water spigot was in the women's room.
Oh, no.
So I had to hold up the bathroom line in the women's room.
Get enough
buckets of hot water to melt all the ice and then go all the way to the back of the building and grab buckets of ice to replace it like in the middle of like the last
and make
call.
Sure that you got all of it so you didn't get a fucking chunk of ice.
Yeah, you
got to
melt all
oh
the, you
got
to melt all the ice and then wipe it out thoroughly and then go over that motherfucker with a flashlight to make sure there's no chunks. And so boom, so we finally get all those motherfuckers out there and Derek's my ride, right? And so every now and then, you know, they'll let my ride come in and wait for me, right? While we closing down. And so, you know, I get my little shifty, you know, but I'm cleaning the place. And I finally open it back up and the last lady that went in the women's room, she shit all over the place. and so it's last call. We pushed everybody out the building and Derek's sitting at the bar and somebody goes, hey, Brian, hey, somebody shit all over the women's room. And also, this is the part I'm leaving out. So keep in mind, the night before, I just murdered at the comedy club. You know, and so Brian, somebody shit in the women's room, and it was just look of just despair on my face. And I met eyes with Derek, and he was like, "It ain't gonna be for long, dog. It ain't gonna be for long." Because I didn't even have to explain it to him, because it's like that feeling of knowing, like, I could be the man. I have it.
Yes.
But I'm someone shit in the women's room, so now I'm this. It's that thing of people walking out going, "I loved your stuff. You were so funny." And then someone shit in the women's room, and it's like, fuck, how
but isn't
long?
Isn't that a beautiful little moment in life that you can remember forever?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like the moment where you knew that this had to end.
We still talk about it to this day. Because that was the moment when it was like, yo, if you just get past, like, if you can stick it out,
yeah,
you'll be fine. And I believed it, you know? I just, yeah. Like, yeah, those moments are important. They're important.
You already had the thing, though. The thing is being funny. And that's some people don't have the thing.
Yeah, well, see, my thing, I was never not confident that I was funny. My lack of confidence was in whether funny mattered. Like, how funny do I have to be before it matters? You know, before I win the contest, before I get the thing.
Right, before you get the recognition.
Right.
That was always a problem in the early days, man. Everybody was so thirsty. Everybody in the early days of comedy, and when I mean like my generation from open mic to being professional, everyone was so thirsty. Mm-hmm. And when you started getting work, you just were so desperado to get more work. Like, everybody was just desperate to bridge that barrier between an amateur and a professional. Quickly, as quickly as you can.
Yeah.
I gotta make some money. I gotta do this. Like, even when you had no business getting paid, everybody was convinced that they were ready.
Yeah, you always think that beforehand. That's why it's also important to save those old sets.
Oh, God, I have some from the 90s that will make my fucking hair stand up.
Yeah. Oh, there's some. Whoa. I thought was fire.
They're terrible.
And I go back now looking, I'm like, oh, no, this could never see the light of day.
Isn't it interesting when you watch like an open mic or someone who's new who has like quick premises, like they don't know how to get out of a premise and expand yet?
Yeah.
And you see like those little baby steps. You know, you see like if someone plays a video game and they're bumping into the wall, like they don't know how to navigate yet.
And every now and then you see them do a move and you're like,
yeah.
It's like in the beginning you're button mashing.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
You don't know how to do the combo, but every now and then you're just hitting the buttons and you pull some shit off.
But you might have like one or two ideas that are pretty good.
Yeah.
And people listen to the premise and they're like, ah.
Because I didn't understand that when I started. When like OGs would walk up and be like, you know, you got something.
Yeah.
You got something, just keep doing it. But
that's the darkest thing about thieves. Because the darkest thing about thieves is they would come and watch the open micers. And they would find those gems. They would sit in the back of the open mic room for 4 or 5 hours. We don't have to name any names. But watch over and over and over again all these people coming up and take their best ideas. Can you imagine if you're sitting there and you're starting out as a comedian, maybe you're a bartender somewhere or whatever, and you know you get a couple nights off a week, and you got a dream, you're trying to make it, and you do a few open mics, and then you do an open mic, and the next thing you know, you're watching your shit on Comedy Central. And you're like, what the fuck?
Dude,
and that's your best bit.
I can't even imagine. That happened to me. Somebody stole a bit. I don't think they did it intentionally, but it was like word for word. It couldn't have, like, it wasn't like something we both thought of. It couldn't have been. Because, you know, my bits are...
Right.
You know, it was like the same thing. I ended up writing a better joke. About the same thing because of it. Because I was just like, I got to let this go because it's going to drive me crazy.
People make mistakes. You think you heard something before, or you think you haven't heard something before and you have. I've done that.
Yeah.
Or you realize, like, oh, shit, that's someone else's bit.
Or you on stage halfway through it, like, oh, wait a minute.
I've been there too. I've had people have to tell me that bit is a bit that I heard before. I'm like, oh, no. Like, but... These are honest mistakes. There's a difference between that, like a failed memory, and then someone who like will sit and cherry pick your act, cherry pick people's acts. Because there was a lot of people in the 90s in particular that did just that.
Imagine being that. See, because that goes back to what we were talking about with No Shame.
Yeah.
Imagine having no...
It's terrible. It's
no
terrible
ambition
to
actually be good at what you're doing.
Well, it's also... It is 100% a signal to everyone around you. You don't give a fuck about anybody but yourself. Like, you're in this thing, and there was a time where that was how a lot of comedians behaved, where there wasn't the kind of camaraderie that we all enjoy now. I think the camaraderie of, like, this generation and the generation just previous, where they started to wake up and realize this, like, we're way more similar to each other. Like, we're than the rest of Hollywood. Like, we need to, like, stay together. We need to, like, support each other, and we need to appreciate each other. We got into this because we're fans of comedy. You get to hang out with the funniest people on the planet. You should just be enjoying it.
Yeah, you should.
You got to figure out how to manage your own emotions and your own jealousy and your own, like, narcissism to not think about other people's success as somehow or another being detrimental to you. That's the difference between people that are strong and people that give in to that very base instinct.
And it's not just being funny, too. We're spoiled in just the intellectual stimulation.
Yeah.
I've been in green rooms where it's like, this conversation couldn't have happened anywhere else. Mm-hmm. Like two or three of the best thinkers in the world. Then, you know, comics aren't, you know, maybe they're not the best thinkers in the whole world, but they always have an angle that you didn't think of. Like the, especially the OGs.
Right.
They always, you have, like, you've been around like Ron, you have Ron White right here, and you know, another big name right here, and you in the back, and just listening to the conversation. And y'all are talking about, you know, fucking World War II or some shit.
Right.
And it's like you hear all these interesting perspectives. It's like we're spoiled like that.
We are. You know who knows a shitload about World War II? Shane Gillis. That what? Motherfucker is a historian. He knows so much, man. He turned me on to this book that I can't even read. It's so hardcore.
Wow. See, I just met him.
Dude, it's recently. About the starvation and cannibalism during World War II. It's like it's rough. I'll tell you exactly what the name of it is, so you freaks out there can go and torture yourselves.
See, it's crazy, just like you said it, but it was like when I filmed the special, it was in New York.
Yeah,
and the New York comics just showed me love. Like all the funny people, when they know you funny,
yes,
it's like get the fuck in here.
That is true. That is one beautiful thing. Is when comedians know you're funny, there's just not that many of it. It's called Captured. No, that's a different one. No, that's the one that Hank told me about. That's good too. Whoops.
How long have we been talking?
Too long. Should probably wrap this up soon. I think like 3 hours in.
Oh, okay.
Is it Between Two Fires or no?
Well, let me find it because it's recent. I know that it's in here somewhere. I think he suggested it to me. I could never bring myself to reading it because he scared me just in the description of it. Fuck, what is it called?
Starvation. And what was the other thing you said?
No, well, the other one was Captured. No, and that's the one that Hank turned me on to. It's not Bloodlands. Oh yeah, that it is. That's what it is.
Is this a fiction or
it's
nonfiction?
Called no, it's nonfiction. It's called Bloodlands. It's in Europe between Hitler and Stalin. And it's all about, you know, when Stalin was in power, there was a tremendous amount of cannibalism. And Lex Fridman has actually talked a lot about this as well because he's Russian and he knows a lot about this, the history of when Stalin was ruling and literally starved their people. But in this book, apparently, there's some horrific depictions of children cannibalizing other children.
Why?
They were starving to death.
In Japan?
In Stalin, Russia.
Oh, in Russia.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he was telling me about it, and I was like, I can't even listen to this. It was so wild and so horrible and so dark, and also so recent. When you think about people cannibalizing people because they're starving to death, and you realize it was only 80 years ago, you're like, what? 80 years ago?
Yeah.
It was only 80 years ago. You're like, what are you saying?
Because when society break down, if like all it would take is one power grid outage
right
to be to go unprepared for just... I say a month before society collapsed.
There was a time out here last year where all the power went out.
How long?
For a lot of people. For over
a week. During that winter storm.
Yeah. Very strange.
Yeah, and then the fucking the power companies were like jacking up the prices. Like they
worse, hotels were jacking up the prices of rooms, like really jacking them up, where people had no power and they had no water. And so they were trying to get hotel rooms, and they were charging like $1,000 a night for a fucking regular bullshit-ass room at a motel, and people were furious.
Jesus.
Yeah. That's the darkness of people when they try to capitalize on horrific events. The brightness of people is when you hear about people. Like, there was a guy who brought his rig to Kansas. He's got a barbecue rig. Did you see that? Made the news. And he started feeding everybody. He's like, all these people lost everything. He goes, I felt compelled. And he brought this big-ass barbecue rig, and he went down there and started cooking for people and giving them free food.
But what was he getting the meat? He brought it with him, too?
He brought everything with him. He's like, I'm going to go feed people. His instinct, when these people got hit by a hurricane, was to go, or a tornado, was to go down there and feed people. So he brought, he was a barbecue guy. He has this big ass rig. Like, look at that thing behind him, that huge smoker. Yeah. So that dude went there and he just cooked for people.
He looked like he don't take no shit.
Well, you know what? You need people like that. In this world.
Jim Finch.
Did he try to run for office?
His name is Jim Finch, a man who, for no other reason other than the people were in need, he loaded up his truck with food, water, and a barbecue grill and drove to Mayfield to serve others. That is a beautiful thing. That's a beautiful thing.
So that means they don't have no electric, no restaurants, no running water. So I just figure I'd do what I can do. Show up with some food and some water.
How beautiful is that? And look behind
that's
him.
Awesome.
Look at that fucking ground behind him. That is, I've never experienced a tornado, but I gotta imagine that is one of the fucking scariest things you could ever experience. Where the sky becomes an angry monster and starts destroying buildings.
And especially because they're so huge that they don't look like they're moving fast.
Yeah.
It's like one of the motherfuckers changing your direction and it's on you.
There's nothing you can do.
Yeah.
Did you see that one? The images that they took of this one that destroyed Kentucky?
No.
Bro. You look at the size of this thing. It is so big. It looks like multiple city blocks. I mean, like
that big?
Like New York City blocks, multiple blocks of just swirling, picking up cows and trees
That's
and houses.
Terrifying.
And you can't get away. Where are you going to go? You have to drive through the cornfield. You're going to hope that it doesn't turn. Hope that you don't hit run into woods right when it turns. You get stuck outside and you get thrown through the air.
You think one of these days we figure out how to make them turn? Like what makes them?
What makes them happen? Then assholes come out. And all these assholes were like saying all these fucking crazy things like somehow it's responsible for those people because those people vote against climate change. And I'm like, what are you saying? Like, meanwhile, and they're like, you know, this is what happens when people ignore nature. And no, you're wrong. You're wrong. They've always had these things. In fact, the number of severe tornadoes has actually dropped over the last few years. The number of tornadoes has risen, but the number of severe tornadoes like this one apparently has dropped. I was reading this
so they're more,
scientific.
They're more common, but not as deadly.
But it could be deadly. So that's the thing. It's like at any moment, there's no real pattern. Like a tornado, if there was, they would know when tornadoes were coming. I mean, they kind of do a little bit. They have some alarms they sound, but they don't know when.
What about hurricanes?
When these motherfuckers are coming. Hurricanes are way easier to spot. Hurricanes,
but
they see
up?
Them forming.
Are they up or down?
Well, hurricanes form over ocean, and hurricanes will make their way across the bay. Jesus Christ, look what it did, dude. Oh, my God, look at that. Look at that. That's fucking insane. I would want to go to all the houses that stayed up. I go, who built that? Let me talk to that dude.
Yeah, this drone is a beast.
Look at that fucking devastation, man. Look at the devastation of those houses. It's insane.
Dozens dead after and the most severe tornado.
Not just dozens dead, but everything's destroyed. Look at all the houses. Who's moving back there? How are you going to move back there? Think about all those people that are displaced. Even if they got out of there before the tornado got there, where do they go now? They lost everything.
Yeah. And I mean, don't we have a government agency for that?
Yeah, no, it's FEMA.
Oh, yeah, they're bad at it.
FEMA. I mean, they're not bad at it. It's just like when something like this happens, like, what the fuck are they going to do? I mean, they can only do so much. They can only give you so much food and shelter, and they do their best to try to help people. But there's images, Jamie, of the actual tornado itself.
I was just going to ask you.
They're so inefficient.
See, it's in the middle of the night, right?
I only saw images.
I saw a video of a picture. It was just being lit up by lightning, so you could only see it when the lightning was hitting.
It was only in the middle of the night? That's even scarier. Imagine you're sleeping and the alarm, wah, wah, wah.
I ain't got it.
Yeah, here we go.
I ain't got
it. Look at the size of that fucking thing. So imagine you're outside, you're hanging out with your friends, just fucking barbecuing and shit, and the light crackles from lightning, and you look over, you see that coming, and you're like, oh my God. Dozens killed by tornadoes across 6 states. Just rolled through. Look at that thing.
Jesus.
My God, it's so big.
And you can't. Oh! You can only see it when the lightning strikes.
Oh my God,
that's
you'd
like
be
the,
so
that's like the
terrified.
Wolf. That's like the wolf in that scene. Like.
Right, but you don't know where it is. Like the wolf in that scene. You're right.
Is it coming towards us? Is it
running away from us? Where do we go? What if we drive into it by accident?
Getting really bad, close, and so.
I thought there's a video I saw where the guy was like filming it himself, and he's like talking to someone.
Look at that, though. Look at that.
That's the scariest. Oh, that's the scariest shit you can see, bro.
And you don't know how fast it's going because it's so big. I mean, it might be going 50 miles an hour, and you feel okay.
Yeah.
I'm fine.
Oh, the next lightning strike, and it's right in front of your ass.
I got to imagine if you have to get home and get your kids. Imagine if your kids are over that way, and you got to drive that, and you got to hope you time it right.
Or you don't. Or you don't go home.
But you know what? You have to. You have to die with your kids. You either save your kids or you die with your kids. And on that happy note, Merry Christmas, motherfuckers. Brian Simpson's Netflix special is out right now. It's fucking hilarious. I watched some clips, one bit that I hadn't seen you do before that was hilarious, about the pennies bit.
Oh, wow.
I don't want to give it away. It's fucking genius.
No, it's on my Instagram now.
Oh, okay. That's where I saw it. It's genius. You're a funny motherfucker. We're going to be tonight at the Vulcan. I'm very excited.
Hell yeah.
You're the shit, man. I'm very happy to see you blowing up.
Let's do it.
There it is right there. That's it. Tell everybody your Instagram.
My Instagram is BS Comedian.
Twitter, same shit?
Same shit, BS Comedian.
And do you have a YouTube page?
Yes, Brian Simpson.
That's it.
Yep.
Goodbye, everybody.
Bye, y'all.